Everybody, you've seen the Instagram videos, you've seen the Facebook posts, and now I can officially say the AlphaZone is back for the week of June 23rd, 2009, after roughly about a year hiatus. My name is Sean Malloy, and always, I am joined by the man from the Emerald Isle himself, Mr. Ronan Fox.
It's been a long time since you said that one, Shawnee. What's the crack?
I know. Were you surprised you still have it? It's just, it's in here. It's never going away.
How's things with Jeff?
It's good, man. We're good. We're back. We're happy. And with Ronan Fox, as always, my main man, the pride of the Sunshine State, Mr. Ken King. He's back. Kent, your left hand is a little bit heavier than the last time I hit.
Well, actually, now it's not. I got the metal back out, too. So.
Oh, there you go.
It's got a nice scar there.
There you go. We've been off the air. In the meantime, I've started a career. Ronan has shifted careers. Kent has been.
Yeah.
All right.
Avoided death.
Yeah. Boy. Death is next. Death is upon us.
It's not that bad.
Coming up in this episode of the AlphaZone Gaming Podcast, we are back with our segment, What We've Been Playing. I'm touching on Resident Evil 2 Remake and Rage 2. Ronan, you're touching on what?
Sorry, you're breaking up slightly, Sean. I didn't catch that last one. What have I been playing?
Yeah, what you've been playing?
So I've been playing a few games, actually. One that's interesting that Kent might be interested in. I got into the technical alpha, I suppose you could call it, of Ghost Recon Breakpoint. And I got to see what that game is all about. And very interesting in terms of, I thought it was just going to be a straight-up sequel to Wildlands, but it's actually not. Like, there's a lot of other mechanics that they're bringing in. Survival mechanics seem to be, you know, first and foremost when it comes to that game. I can't talk too much about it because you signed the whole Weaver at the start that you're not allowed to tell about, say, bugs or that. So I won't go into any of those kind of details. But what I will say is you drop down. It kind of gives you like a Rambo-style mission at the start where you're behind enemy lines. And a couple of changes that I seen was enemies seem to be leveled in Breakpoint, which I don't remember them being actually leveled in Wildlands. Kent, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong there.
Not externally. That was going on behind the scenes, but there were areas that were harder than others, but not leveled like you would think of as typical game, having, you know, like the header and everything.
Yeah. Sure. So this is, like, it will actually tell you these enemies are higher level than you, so stay away from them. So I stayed away from them, but I was praying that it wasn't going to be a division thing where they're harder to kill, they become bullet sponges. What I was hoping for is that they become more tactically aware. So that's what I'm hoping those guys are going to bring to the table. But I've been playing that, well, I played that for the weekend, really, really enjoyed it, cannot wait to get my hands on that. The graphics were, they weren't as good as the finished product, obviously, when it was released, so it was hard to kind of gauge how beautiful that game will be, but I can imagine that with Ubisoft, it's just going to be stunning. And that was shown at E3, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But apart from that, I've been kind of playing Zelda Breath of the Wild as one of Shawnee's favorite games.
We'll talk about it later.
Got myself a lend of a Nintendo Switch off one of the guys and was streaming that actually last week, and, you know, just with the kid. But I've actually got a couple of things to say about it as well that you might agree with me, Sean. I find it hard because I actually have been playing another game, Horizon Zero Dawn. I find it difficult to switch between them two. I think Horizon Zero Dawn actually gives you a lot more moment-to-moment gameplay that it just feels like it flows a lot better, whereas Zelda, you really need to put everything into that game. And, you know, there's moments in Zelda where you're literally doing nothing. You're just kind of traveling from one area to another area, talking to someone, then on to another area. Where I find in Horizon Zero Dawn, everything is just, you know, so quick paced. You come across some amazing sights in that game. And for me, it's nearly more interesting than the world of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So I've been playing, Horizon, Zelda, Breakpoint, and of course I've been playing FIFA as well. On the PC side of it, I've been playing PUBG, Horizon, Forza Horizon 4, which I'm loving as well. And that's kind of what I've been doing for the last while.
Yeah. Can't so for those who don't know, so most of the games can't are Ronin just listed off. They're out. So Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Breakpoint, that's out worldwide on October 4th of this year. So as the show rolls on of the year as the year rolls on, you can expect full impressions from Kent, Ronan, and I, as we both got pretty deep into Ghost Recon Wildlands, the last title in that series. So I also can't wait to give that one a go. Mr. Kingsford, what have you been playing, sir?
Actually, I think it's interesting to hear Ronan's feelings on Horizon versus Wildlands real quick, because that's the exact transition I was doing when that game came out, and it's stark. It's a hard transition to make. I
It's
definitely
difficult.
agree. As far as lately what I've been playing, a lot of Division 2. I've really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the
Same.
first Division, I think, probably more than the other guys did. And if I was going to make a laundry list of like complaints that I have with that game, they did a really good job of sort of going down the laundry list and addressing the criticism. And I think that game, even myself included, if people who are longtime fans of the show remember, I wasn't really excited about that game, and I wasn't, you know, going, oh man, I'm really going to get into this. And KG, who has been on the show before, he kind of pushed me into it, is something that him and I can kind of run is some junk food gaming, which that game's actually not, but we were hoping. But I've really enjoyed it, and I think that it's done a really good job of addressing a lot of the criticism of the first one. So I've sunk some time into that, and then just to kind of mix it up, some Rage 2, which I was a big fan of the first Rage. I think that that's a better overall game than the first Rage, unquestionably. But the one piece of magic that was in the first Rage that Rage 2 is missing is that when people have known the history of that game is actually a lot of different stuff that it had built in that same engine, and they put it together and made a cohesive game out of it, which is why it felt like the story didn't make sense in a lot of spots because they were combining stuff. But what the advantage of that was is the enemy types felt really unique. The areas felt really unique, and Rage 2 doesn't have that. So I'm a little bummed about that. It is a spiritual successor, a direct sequel to that game, but I've been really enjoying it just as a competent shooter. It's just a really good competent shooter. And then Mortal Kombat 11, which, you know, what can you say? I mean, it's just a great fighting game. I think that it's more of a return to form than X was. I wasn't real huge on Mortal Kombat X. I feel like Mortal Kombat 11 does a much better job of being approachable for new fans, which I think X did a good job of, for people that aren't traditionalists in Mortal Kombat, but it also still is very appealing to traditionalists, which for me personally, I didn't feel like X did that great of a job doing. As always, NetherRealm sets a high bar for fighter campaigns. Just the campaigns are thoroughly enjoyable in fighting games, which is kind of strange, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like what NetherRealm has done with the two Injustice games and then now like Mortal Kombat 11, they're putting this emphasis like on story mode. And so even then, it's like I'm not the biggest fighting game fan, but when both Injustice 2 and Mortal Kombat 11 came out, I made sure to play those titles because I wanted to experience like the story of bouncing between characters. And they what they've done is like something super cool. I love how 11 plays with the whole idea of time and how like you're having multiple versions of the same exist at one point. So I thought it was really cool. I want to talk about Rage 2 also because you're 100% right when it comes to it's missing something that the first Rage like didn't have. And people complain about the first Rage that it was slower paced or it's pretty methodical like how you go about it. And Rage 2 in all purpose is it's like you said, it's more of a competent shooter. It's the mechanics are there, like how you're juggling like abilities with the push and the slide and like the teleport and the double jump and like all these different powers you're getting and expanding. It really does make sense of like how it's evolved. And they do try to give distinct like areas of the world, but have you finished it yet?
No, I haven't finished it yet. I've been pulled into a Division 2 hole pretty deep the last couple of weeks, so I haven't made a
Yeah,
whole lot of
it's not
progress
coming
on it
back.
lately.
Yeah. Because my thing with Rage 2 is like I wanted it to last a lot longer than it had. So for me, it's like I was hearing like early estimations of like time for completion of like the narrative of it. And when I finished it up, I'm like, oh, I wanted more of this game. And that was like one of my big issues is like I wanted more time to explore more of the world. There's only like one or two missions that happen in area the corners of the map. And I was like, oh, this was an area I wanted to like flesh out more and like see more in. But the one thing I will say about Rage 2 also is like they brought in Avalanche Studios who were working on Mad Max from 2016. to handle some of the driving mechanics. You can feel
a lot of that DNA in there too, because I put a lot of time in Mad Max.
Yeah, the car combat feels solid. Like when there's some stuff that's directly ripped out of Mad Max, like taking down the convoy. But when you're doing that, I'm like, oh, I remember like what Mad Max felt like in 2016. And like that's another thing I loved about Rage 2 is because if you've been rocking and rolling with us on this show a long time, we were all very big proponents of Mad Max when a lot of people were like, put their nose up at that game. Like the car, everything felt great. So I love that studio is kind of getting like the second chance with existing in Rage. I know it'll never happen, but I want another Mad Max game because that would be incredible to see what we can do. The other thing is, I posted to a couple Facebook groups that, like, now the school year has ended, I'm able to go back through my backlog of the winter, and I'm finally diving into Resident Evil 2 Remake. And that game, man, this game is something ridiculously special. And I fired up Leon Kennedy's campaign right from the beginning. I never played the original on PlayStation. For some reason, 2 was the one I skipped over. I played 1, jumped to 3 Nemesis, and then stayed with the entire series. And so revisiting this is really, really special to me because I don't know how they pulled off some of the aspects of this game on a PlayStation 1 era when it comes to Mr. X the Tyrant and like the mood and the tone and what it's like moving about like that police station and these underground labs and the sewer system. So, I mean, yeah, I wanted to know like your guys' opinion. Ro, did you play the Resi 2 remake, and you were also giving me crap because I'm playing it on assisted mode. I like baby-ass baby games.
Dude, you can give me crap because I rock that thing with mouse and keyboard on the PC, so, so don't be worrying about it. Yeah, I got it on PC, and I was a little bit afraid. Like, usually with all these remakes, you're a little bit afraid that it might sour the original. But yeah. I think you can tell right from the start, even the promo of this game when it came, it was just like everything looked so polished, it looked great. But it's when you actually just control Leon for the first time. I think the start of the game is in that like the gas station.
Yeah, the gas station.
And that is just creepy. You go in, you don't know what's going to happen. Well, you know what's going to happen, but you're kind of looking around every corner. It changes the gameplay. It advances the gameplay in a way that I think it needed to, but it still gives you that, you know, that what's behind me and that kind of slow turn. That game blows my mind. I started that game on hardcore, and to be honest with you, it absolutely kicked my ass. It really, you know, it was difficult. So much so that I got to, I'm not even going to give you a kind of any spoilers, but I got to a place where there's a car park and you're kind of going back and forth. Yeah. And I literally was down to my last bullet and there was just no way I could get by the next area. So I actually have to go and play that game again. And the fact that you're talking about it makes me want to go and give it a go again. It was fantastic on stream as well. When I was streaming it, people were jumping in that knew the game inside out, helping me along without spoiling anything, but helping me along. And it was just, it's one of the, if not the best remake ever done. And I think it just pays so much homage to the original.
Yeah. Ken, did you give this one a go at all?
I didn't get to dive into that much. I got to pick at it on a friend's system. I am not the hugest Resident Evil fan, but just on a remake tip, I think that having put hands on it, I could say that there's two things that happen to remakes, right? Like when you do a remake like that, you either end up with this really beautiful game. And one of my favorite games that got remade had this problem, in my opinion, was Shadow of the Colossus. Yeah. It looked really gorgeous. It had this really beautiful sheen, but underneath it, it still felt like an old game, and you really lose track of how much you've gotten used to modern controls.
Sure.
And I think that tends to be a little immersion breaking, especially when you've got years of playing on modern controls. It's such a gradual change that you don't notice how drastic the difference is until you do something like that. And then I think the other thing that happens with them is they kind of lose tonally a lot of the original. Like they, maybe it controls better, it moves better. It's a new game, but it's missing some of the soul. And even though I'm not a huge Resident Evil fan, I you can see that a lot of effort was made to make sure that those things didn't happen. Someone who had been involved with some remakes near and dear to their heart that had done that, you know, was on that team. Maybe multiple people, because I think that's. Yeah. That's probably one of the better remakes I've ever seen. You know, even not being a fan of it, it was just very impressive technically, you know?
Yeah, it's like the technical aspect of this game is like super impressive because what you said is exactly my feeling. Like, the Shadow remake came in what, like a couple years ago? That one came out 2000, like early 2008.
Yeah, it released right around the last PSX, so that would have been 2 years ago, yeah.
Okay, so with that one, it was like I felt the same thing. Like playing Shadow and like looking at it is stunning because I've said on this show before for those who've been like again rocking and rolling with us for so long. It's really this it's stunning, but when it's like press triangle to jump, it's like something like that small. I'm like, oh no, in modern games we've realized that X is the natural like button progression to jump. It's like you jump with like the bottom part of your th and so when you're dealing with like these mechanics or like everything under the hood of like how this game is actually moving, it's something that this Resident Evil 2 remake has just like addressed because everything feels modern. And if this was released like right now as like a first game in a series, like you would be as invested in it. It was incredible. And so
Like
I remember Ronan do
yeah, I think what is amazing about the Resident Evil game is it changes the original in story beats. It's not just a fresh skin. It's actually, they rewrite the whole code, they rewrite new scenes, and even though it's a remake, there's always that fear for me if I, 'cause I love the original Resident Evil 2. And
Right.
if it was just a one for one with a nice skin, I don't think it would have had the same effect for me.
Right.
It's the little added parts that aren't in the original that really kind of just knocked home that this is masterful what they did. It changes it in a way that doesn't ruin the original, but makes it feel like a new game. And I think that's where they really hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, 'cause for me with this game is as we're going through and like solving these puzzles and having these puzzle mechanics, it's like, oh, this like a 3D depth, like Metroidvania style. It's like one key opens this set of rooms, then you go through and you go to another room and you get a separate key and it goes through. And so like that's what's like really, really impressive with me. Boy, before we move on, any other things to hit for what we've been playing?
I mean, I could go back for a year, but I don't think anyone wants to.
We've all played Red Dead Redemption 2 since we had the last show, so
Yeah.
I mean, what was your take on Red Dead 2? Just a quick throw out
I
there.
yeah, my take on Red Dead 2 was narratively it's stunning. Like how they actually like the narrative of that game and how they tell the story of Arthur Morgan is like fantastic. That being said, I don't think that game was ever fun to play. Like
I say, I feel like Red Dead Redemption 2 is gonna be my is as to me as Breath of the Wild is to Sean. People have asked me what I think of that game, and I don't have much good to say about it. And my problem is like I do think there's a good story in there, but the controls are very old. It feels like I'm playing a remake. Like they haven't updated the controls at all from the PS3 generation. You think that's not that far back, but it is. It's weird how noticeable that is. And then I think they made an effort to stretch the story out so it feels like an old Western, but you don't really need to do that in video games. The stories are already stretched out. A movie's 2 to 3 hours. You know, a really epic Western is 3 hours. A short video game is 8. You're like, your story's stretched, you're good. There's gonna be quiet moments of people exploring because that's what games are. And I just felt like the game was fucking boring.
Your
Everyone got
man, it's
really
like,
upset. Boring. Boring.
See, it's like what's funny is like I would love to like to debate that point, but like I'm with you. Like sometimes I'm like I just need to get to the next act, like in this game. I'm like, oh, I can feel the end like coming, and I want to see how it concludes. And so there are times towards the end where I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna stick to main story missions. Like I'm not going toward white checkboxes anymore. I'm just doing all main. And so at the end, as the credits roll, and I'm like, oh, no. Okay, I'm good. I don't have to try online. I don't have to like. I'm like, okay, I had my fill with this game. Now, Ro, what was your opinion
No,
on
like
Red Dead
I can
Redemption 2?
totally understand where you guys are coming from. I enjoyed it for about 40 hours, and then after the 40 hour mark, it was like I need to get to the end. And then you get to the end, and then the epilogue comes, and I did feel like Ken pointed out there that it was just way too long in terms of what it needed to be. I thought they could have rounded up the story a lot quicker. I actually liked the gameplay. I liked the heavy feel of Arthur. Some of the character to character interactions were brilliant as well. The story was good, and it kind of kept me engaged. But like that, it was the length was an issue for me. I'm a family man now. I work, 6 days a week. I can't be putting 70 hours into one single game. I didn't hate it. I did really, really enjoy it, but the length was an issue for me.
I'm kind of harsh on it. I think that technologically it's a brilliant achievement. I don't want to take anything away from Rockstar. What it really is that you're so used to Rockstar giving you a watermark every time they're out.
Yeah.
It's a new watermark in games every time they come to the table. And this was a good game. And if anybody else made this game, it would probably be a great game. But because of what a watermark the first Red Dead or the second Red Dead, but the first Redemption was, I just think that that's really what hurt this game, is that it wasn't super special, and it wasn't so much a watermark this time. It really felt like an up-resed remake or an up-resed DLC. Like it didn't feel like it was drastically separate from the first game. It didn't feel like somewhere new. It felt like a lot more of the old stuff, but with, and technologically just beautiful. And Ronan said, the NPCs just incredible. Technologically, just an amazing game. But for me, it had such a hard time getting to the point. I just gave up. I was like, all right, you didn't get to the, you're never going to get to the point. I quit. I give up.
That's fine. So there you go. So that was,
I'm glad I brought that up.
Before we move on to E3, because we've been off the air for a while. What are your guys' game of the year 2008? I'm curious.
Ooh.
Wow.
Did we all go God of War on 18?
I feel like I would have a hard time for 18. I have a hard time picking. It's because they're so different. It has to be either Wildlands or God of War. Yeah, I mean. Yeah. What they offer is so diametrically opposed that I can't have the year without either of them. Like, if we're really being honest, what they gave me was phenomenal, but in totally different ways, you know?
Yeah. Ro, do you have a couple that stood out to you at the end of last year that you'll remember?
Well, I have a couple behind me here. Red Dead was actually up there, but I also have Spider-Man as well. That was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
2018, that was pretty phenomenal. I think it was just the fact that I played it with Nate, and me and him just loved that game to bits. It was just one of those games that I wish there was more Marvel games like that Spider-Man game. And I suppose we'll talk a little bit more about the Marvel game that's coming out. But I want to see more games like that in the Marvel universe. I think it just did a spectacular job. Fun as hell. And I like the way you start as you're fully trained and you hop out the window and it's like, let's go, let's just do this. Had a few kind of repetitive problems, but me and Nate didn't care. We just loved it.
Yeah, no, it's like we talked before, we both have a Nate. Like, I also have a Nate. And, like, he was the same way. He would come over to the house and just want to swing around New York City for hours on end. I'm like, I mean, that was kind of like the point of that game. It's like how good it feels. And so that was beautiful. Because for me, it's always – it was for me, it was God of War and then Assassin's Creed Odyssey were my two that I'll remember, like, last year. But
I haven't played Odyssey yet.
Oh, Odyssey's incredible.
I played Origins, and I really liked it, and I was afraid to touch Odyssey because it's so damn long.
It's huge. I think that was the game. I think the final clock I put into that game after the last DLC that just ended was like 84 hours. Wow. And so, it was just like, and it grabbed me. Like, the combat feels so good. So, half off to...
Origins, or were you again? Were you kind of...
Loved Origins. Yeah, I loved Origins a lot. Odyssey, okay. I just thought they took everything good in Origins and just cranked it to... I think it just got that much better, like, as the series. And I love that I love that Ubisoft has taken the year off to, like, revisit the series. And now every indication it's going to be, Assassin's Creed Ragnarok.
Vikings,
they
might have
to now work. Yeah, Vikings. And so I can't wait what that looks like in 2020. And when that launches, we're looking at the new console launches right at the same time. So that'll be a launch title for PS5 and Project Scarlet, which I'll talk about in a bit from Xbox. But... So I'm jumping into next year, 2020. And so as a good transition to this, so E3 2019 happened roughly about 10 days ago. So from June 11th through the 3rd. And what the boys and I have decided to do was we each compiled a list of our three favorite moments from now. This could be a specific game unveiling. This could be a specific moment of like each of the conferences, the map. But as a caveat to this, we're not allowed to discuss two things for more than 30 seconds. We're not allowed to discuss Keanu Reeves walking out at the Cyberpunk reveal.
Because... Just finish the podcast now.
Yeah. So Keanu Reeves, for sure, it was like stole the show, and we all love Keanu Reeves, and he's the best. And I also put down, we can't talk about John Bernthal's awesome dog, who just laid on stage and was like the perfect dog during the Ubisoft conference. So with that... I'm going to have Ronan go first, and we're going to do this round-robin style. So we're each going to pick one game or one moment from E3 2019 and discuss why we liked it, the impact moving forward, and our initial thoughts. So Ronan, take a...
Okay, so I'm changing mine up a little bit. It's not that one of the ones that you guys picked, but me and Kent actually watched the Microsoft press conference live. And we went live to the Facebook, and we had a little back and forth as it was on. I think you were away, Sean. That's why you didn't jump on. But it was nice to just have one of you guys on and get the reactions. And it was a nice kind of piece to do. And one of the ones that kind of stood out to me is it came on, and me and Kent actually thought it was a new Alan Wake game. But it ended up being a Blair Witch Project IP.
I thought the same thing. When they flashed the flashlight. Okay.
So, like, I find the movie very, very interesting. And it was something that I just didn't expect to see. It looks like it's kind of a survival horror game. It could, you know, go into the same bracket as a Resident Evil, and I'm really interested to see what comes out of that, because the trailer looked cool. Like, if you're comparing it to Alan Wake, they're definitely doing something right. They've got the atmosphere down, and I love the way it just didn't give too much away. You didn't even know it was Blair Witch until the bloody thing came up at the end. So I'm interested to see what that is going forward, just for the simple fact that it was a little bit of a shocker for me, and very interesting. So that's my first pick.
Cool. Yeah, no, like, I'm right with you guys. I wasn't on the watch long. I was watching via a cell phone, like, in a hotel room, and watching it. I was like, oh, they're going to do Remedy's going to do another Alan Wake. And even though they're working on a separate game, like Control right now, multi-platform, like, oh, this is cool. They're going back to Alan Wake. Like, the flashlight mechanic of burning, like, the demon was there. Yeah. And all of a sudden it stops and it's first person perspective. I'm like, wait, maybe this isn't Alan Wake. Then all of a sudden Blair Witch pops up. I'm like, that is cool. And I did not expect that. So yeah, I'm right with you. That was a cool moment.
Yeah. I think a good watermark for marketing is, are people who wouldn't even be interested in it interested, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not the hugest Blair Witch fan. I'm not the hugest Alan Wake or Resident Evil or survival horror is generally not my genre. Yeah. And just a very masterful trailer, excellent reveal, because, you know, like you guys, I'm excited to see more about that. That game is nowhere near anything that is on my radar ever. It's not the kind of game that I'm going to line up and go grab, but just the quality of the marketing and the way they went about it and the tone and just really well done has me very intrigued. You know, I definitely want to see more. I definitely have it on a list of things I want to try out and give a shot, which it wouldn't normally be there if they didn't do such a great job of bringing that game out and introducing it that way.
Yeah, for sure. Kent, your first favorite moment from E3 2019.
So my first favorite one is really kind of two things combined. And I think I hope it's a trend is what it really is. And that's, anyone who's fans of the show know we're all fans of Diablo 3. We will proselytize for that game. Yeah. And the combination of Diablo style gameplay and properties that, like, I really love and I know a lot of other people love has really excited me. And so, like, I think the big ones in that are Minecraft Dungeons and Ultimate Alliance 3. Both of those just look great to me. They're properties that I have a deep affinity for. I love Minecraft. I love Marvel stuff. But just more of that Diablo 3 style gameplay, and, you know, a term that I think we're known for is junk food gaming, and Diablo 3 is one of those games that's in, like, the Hall of Fame for me of junk food gaming. It's so great 100%. To just grab some friends, jump in, play, and the quality of the IP is another level, because the reality is I don't think there's a lot of people, at least, and maybe I'm wrong, the internet can come for me, but I don't think there's a lot of people that are really doing Diablo 3 lore. They're not going after Diablo 3 in their personal time. They love the game. It's a great game. They love the story, but there's not people that are walking around with Diablo 3 characters on their shirt, you know, and, sure. And they're not buying comics about Diablo 3 characters, and they're not, you know, buying Telltale story games about Diablo characters and doing Let's Plays, you know. So I think that that trend, and I hope that trend continues, and that really, for me, had me very excited, especially because of, you know, playing with, like, you guys on there, playing with other people I know that are just looking for something fun to grab some friends and play, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. Ultimate Alliance 3 is one of these reasons why I'm glad. So I'll go into, like, my next one I'm going to talk about is detailing the Switch, too, but... for the long time, my Switch was like collecting dust. And so like when they announced Ultimate Alliance 3, I'm like, oh, I'm super intrigued about this game. And you're exactly right. Like Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2, I bought on 360, then I rebought on PS4 for just that. It was like you jump in and you just kick some guys in the head and you run around and you collect like little medallions. And it's like, exactly like this junk food game. Like as much as, so like you, when Division 2 came out, I'm like, this is junk food gaming for sure. And then you go into it and there's all these just complex mechanics and like, just like resetting characters. I'm like, oh, this is not junk food gaming. This is like full-time job game. And so when you get to something like Ultimate Alliance 3, I'm all about it. And Minecraft never spoke to me, but like seeing that game run and see like how it actually looks, like actually being played, super intriguing. So like Blair Witch to you is Minecraft Dungeons to me, where I'm like, I can go mess around with that game. That looks super cool. And so I'm all about it. Ro, what do you think?
Yeah, I loved it. I think it looked brilliant. It looked really interesting and a massive kind of shock to see that IP being used in that way. And I think it shows that Microsoft are really serious about trying new things, trying different aspects. Like the you know, the doors are really open to where they can bring that IP, and I think it's an interesting thing. I'm delighted that Microsoft have them, and yeah, I'll definitely jump in with that, especially with Nate. I mean, when he's seen it, he was like, wow. Like, and this is a game that he doesn't even play anymore, but when you see it like that in a different light, you see that kind of familiarity, then it changes everything up. So yeah, I'm definitely excited for that one.
Yeah, me too. So I'll go next. So the first thing I want to talk about is, like, I'm staying on the Switch, was the announcement of The Witcher 3 Complete Edition coming for Switch. For the longest time, I've been feeling like super underwhelmed with like the Switch. Even though it has great first party titles, I'm just not coming back to it to play like indie games. I'd still rather sit on the couch with a PS4 controller, even though the Switch is like the on the go gaming and it's like the indie machine right now. But I thought this was a super cool announcement, even though it was leaking out. They're down-resing it a little bit. They're porting it so it can run on Switch. But man, it just proves that the Switch is a real player like in the video game market right now. If CD Projekt Red is giving like the game to an outside developer, I'm forgetting their name right now, to run like the complete port with all the expansion. It's a massive game. I love The Witcher 3. This is one that I can't wait to like play on the go. I won't lie, this might be coming to work for me with me like during like planning periods, like while teaching and stuff, to like fire off a couple or run a mission or yell for the horse roach and like roam around and stuff, because I want to see it. It's one of those seeing is believing things, and even though it was a CG trailer, which was like a trend for E3 2019, like not a lot of gameplay was shown for games, and it was driving me nuts. The fact that this is one that we know it's coming 2019, it's dated, not specific like calendar date, but 2019 guaranteed, if it pushes no matter what. But yeah, no, I can't wait to dive into this one. Should be amazing.
See, and I'm kind of the opposite on that one. Like, I'm a little more pessimistic about it because it's supposed to be coming out that soon.
Yeah.
Because they avoided gameplay. And, you know, so much of, for me at least, so much of what The Witcher is just getting engrossed in that world.
Yeah.
That for me personally, you know, it's not something that I associate with taking on the go. For me, it's like it's sinking into the couch with a controller and just losing myself in that world.
Yeah.
But I also, kind of like you said, I think that really like the silver lining of that announcement is that there are people out there that they're buying Switches and they're using them to the point that it needs to be addressed on there. That game was such a massive phenomenon in this generation, and I think that it, for me, it's more a signal of how far the Switch has come in the short time it's been out, that CD Projekt Red feels they have to address that. Like, it, that game was an 800-pound gorilla, and they're like, look, we can't not address the Switch with this. This game has done great for us, and these are people that need to experience that if they don't have another way to, you know. And I think that speaks very well to the overall condition of the game industry, the overall condition of the Switch and Nintendo. So I think it's really great from that perspective. But as far as the actual performance, I'm definitely a little leery.
Yeah, same. Ro, what'd you think?
Yeah, like, in terms of if you're a Switch owner, they just seem to be pumping out games and that thing like no tomorrow. And I think it's good for, like, there's a lot of people out there that own the Switch but mightn't own any of the other consoles. Like, I know three or four people that picked up a Switch because they're Nintendo fans. You ask them, have you ever played The Witcher? Never touched it. So the fact that they're going to, this could possibly be their first experience with The Witcher, they're not going to give a crap if the graphics are dumbed down a little bit.
Yeah.
For me, I'm kind of with Kent. It wouldn't be something that I would play on the go. I've actually jumped back into The Witcher on PC. So that's kind of the other end of the spectrum, if you get me. And I'm loving it. The graphics, yes, are amazing, but in terms of what you get on the Switch, you still get those amazing character interactions. You still get some of the best side quests you'll ever play in any video game ever, even if you can call them side quests. I don't know what those guys do over in CD Projekt Red, but
yeah, they're like just alternate main quests.
Yeah, everything just feels like you're meant to be doing it, and you're still going to get that on the Switch, but for me to play something like that on handheld, I think it just might take a little bit away for me personally. But I think it's still amazing that these games are coming, and they just don't seem to be stopping with that thing. Nintendo Switch is amazing piece of kit, amazing. And how I don't have one yet is a mystery. But I'll be getting one soon if they keep.
Because you don't have stuff. Costco in Ireland. Costco puts them shits on sale.
Yeah. They're pretty expensive. That is definitely one of the issues. They are pretty expensive. But you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? And every time I see these games coming, it seems like they are. Do you know what I mean? It, you can't really treat it as a handheld for 110 quid or 100 quid. It's treated as a console, and it is a console. You know, you can plug it into your TV, you can take it out. Like, that alone, that remote play aspect of it, that's priceless, if you ask me. I just love the way that Switch is going. I just love the support it's getting from outside developers, and it's an amazing time to be a Switch owner.
Yeah, that's one thing that I always have to take into account when I talk about Switch software with other people, or the condition of the Switch, is like, for me personally, you know, I'm kind of the opposite of Sean. Like, the only thing that's grabbing me on the Switch is indies. The only thing that's really hooked me hard on that game is games like Floor Kids or Katana Zero or
Katana Zero Tiny Metal. Is great, though.
Yeah, they're great games. And I think a lot of that, you know, I think Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is the first tentpole game coming to Switch that I am like, I have to have it. I'm not going to miss it. It's going to be day one, you know, but for the most part, that's been a very indie focused thing for me. But I forget, you know, that I'm kind of exceptional in that, you know, we all are, in that we have multiple outlets for gaming. So we've all played a lot of the stuff that's coming to the Switch on PlayStation 4, on Xbox, on PC, you know. So for us, it's a little different. And for, like Ronan said, I know people that, you know, they went out and bought a Switch. Like, one of my friends bought a Switch. He bought it for his kid. His kid, all he ever plays on it is, you know, just kind of goofy little port stuff that he's Fortnite. Not interested in.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, and so he's like, man, you know, he uses it, but he also limits his screen time, which means he gets to use it. And he's like, man, you know, I just picked up, like, he'll be someone that picked up Witcher 3 for sure. And hit me and be like, dude, I just picked up Witcher 3. This game's incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, does he care that it's 720 versus the 1080 I played? Absolutely not. It's a phenomenal experience. And so for people like that, yeah, I agree. It's a great opportunity, you know?
Cool. Ro, your second choice.
So, kind of going off that, a little bit of a segue, CD Projekt Red, my favorite moment, obviously, we won't talk about Keanu Reeves for too long, but even before E3, Cyberpunk was one of these games that, because what The Witcher 3 and The Witcher 2, I've played The Witcher 2 on PC since I played The Witcher 3, and that game, I mean, if you can have a chance to go back and play The Witcher 2, play the damn thing. The opening area of that that game is just ridiculous. Like, you lay siege to a castle, you're in basically like a full-on war with this other faction, and it's just crazy how that game was. That was the game that actually created the PC Master Race term, was The Witcher 2. We talked about that before.
It was in Quickworks and like TurboTax and Minesweeper and Ski Free and
So CD Projekt Red, those guys, in terms of, I don't know what we're going to be getting with Cyberpunk, because we didn't see a whole lot of gameplay, and that was one of my gripes about this E3, was we didn't get to see a whole lot of gameplay. Me and Ken said it while we were watching it. Show us what we're going to be doing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what are we going to be, like, how is the game, how are we going to be controlling this guy? And it showed a little bit of a snippet at the end of CD Projekt where you've seen, or sorry, Cyberpunk, where you've seen a couple of first person, you know, really sped up, I think, just a little few scenes cut together. But it doesn't matter. It could have not even been shown, and I'm still hyped for that game. So to have it come out the way they did, come out with Keanu Reeves, I just think it was just ridiculous. And one of the best presentations in an E3 I've ever seen. I just thought it was masterful.
Yeah. I think that a big part of that game for me, why I'm staying hype, is if you guys recall when they went through a similar genesis with The Witcher 3, when they showed gameplay, but it was vertical slices that they had made to show E3 right. what it's going to look like. And people went, okay, but there's no way. If you remember the boat scene where he's cruising across the lake and the weather's changing, and people are like, there's no way it's going to look like that on a console. Just won't happen. And, you know, I would say they got 90% of the way there, so much so that people forgot that there's, that there was some fidelity loss. And for PC players, it got there.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm staying hyped, because so far all we've seen from Cyberpunk is that same stuff. It's vertical slice gameplay that could very easily never see the light of day in the form of us ever seeing those scenes or those playthroughs again. But
right.
just the pedigree of CD Projekt Red and their willingness to polish their game to the point of being, you know, one of a kind, I think is what really has me excited for that game. But yeah, I think that's, I haven't talked to anybody that's not on the top of their list, either just for the Keanu moment or for what that game could be, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, my opinion on Cyberpunk, I love the marketing campaign. I love like what they're doing. Like, I love how like they just slowly brought that game back to the forefront of like people's mind. I like all of it. And so really like seeing how they're like evolving Cyberpunk into something like huge and massive. And that's going to be like this treadstone moment like next year. It's like you either are playing Cyberpunk or you are not playing Cyberpunk. And on 16 April 2020, it's like this is the. And I love that Cyberpunk is like, it's pushing this current generation of console like towards the very end. But it's also, I 100% believe it's going to be one of those games that it's playable on both like next gen and this one. And then on next gen consoles, it's going to look that much better. So to get like double dips like into Cyberpunk, it's like the same thing of like double dipping into Last of Us like with this generation that came out. It's, you want to play it on PS3, but PS4 is 60 frames per second like with full like 4K like updates. And so it's, what is Cyberpunk going to be like for the future? And knowing how good CD Projekt is with DLC and giving like these massive DLC patches, so it's like Cyberpunk the game isn't the end of Cyberpunk, it's just the beginning of Cyberpunk. And knowing like what that game is going to be like moving forward, like I can't wait. I'm all over it day one, as much as like the world is going to be like on Cyberpunk like day one. Like I cannot wait for that game and to see like what is it 100%. So the mystery of Cyberpunk is as intriguing to me as the game itself. So yeah, I can't wait, boys. That one, whoo, that's a That's a birthday present to me in 2020.
Definitely.
Ken, you're next.
So I think the next one I want to go with is going to be a little surprising because of twice now I've mentioned stuff that I don't care. I'm not big on, but Ghostwire Tokyo looks really exciting to me. There's a game in the Resident Evil series that a lot of people didn't like, and I enjoyed it thoroughly because it shot the gap on stuff that I really enjoy, because I do enjoy some of the atmospheric horror stuff. I like that. I don't like a lot of the mechanics in survival horror games. Right. I think they push you a little too hard into immersion breaking for the sake of making it everything count. And Ghostwire Tokyo, to me at least, granted we've seen pretty limited, but the way it's sort of presenting itself right now is almost kind of similar to that, like that Raccoon City vibe, where you've got some good tactical action, which I'm always in for. But
is this the interesting one where, like, is this the one where everyone like disappeared in Tokyo and you're trying to like put it together? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that was one of those announcements that sort of slid by, and I don't think people, you know, I saw a lot of people after after Bethesda's conference go, well, there was nothing good in there, and I went, man, I mean, I don't know if they're coming soon. That's my only caveat to this game, you know. And one of the other games I'm going to talk about is from their presentation as well, and you know, I don't know that they're coming soon, but just conceptually and what they're talking about, to me, we're kind of some of the more interesting, creative, like little genre bending stuff that came out of E3 for me. I think that that conference was highly underrated. There was some hitters in there, and then there was some new stuff. And so Ghostwire Tokyo is on my radar because it's that right blend of, you know, some good horror stuff, at least it looks to be some good horror stuff and some good tactical action. And even, you know, sort of the speak coming out of the marketing people, was, you know, along those lines. It's like, you know, this is an action horror game. And I think that that kind of harkens back to the chunk of Resident Evil that I like, which is the later stuff. You know, I enjoy sort of more the action horror. I like, I think that's one of the reasons I like Bloodborne so much, because that is genuinely, you know, a top tier action horror game, you know?
Tokyo looks awesome to me. Like, I love that concept. And like, we haven't seen a lot, but that, what, 2 minute trailer that they ran, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm in. Like, this concept looks super intriguing. I love like the passion that these developers like went on stage with, and like they're like so excited to show their game. And this is Tango, right?
Is it Tango? That, I honestly can't remember. I'm usually pretty good about that, but I can't remember.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, because I think now I forget, like, their previous game. It was the Evil Within, I think.
It's Shinji Mikaji Studio.
I think it's Tango. So anyway, it's like, just knowing the pedigree of that studio and like what they're working with, like, I can't, that game looks insane to me. I'm all
100%.
Bro, you got anything for Tokyo?
I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more of the gameplay and kind of going from there. Like I said before, it was, you know, it looked, as Ken said, it looked great, the ideas were great. Give me some gameplay and then I can give a full-on opinion then.
Next one I want to talk about is, it sounds like it's a diss, but it's not really. So the other thing that popped up in the Microsoft conference was the first official details of Project Scarlet. Like, they're making like a new solid state drive for Project Scarlet, and it's 50 times like the powerful of all this stuff. It's like, it's got the most flops, as like people say. It's like, this block, it's going to be super powerful. And PlayStation
hardware.
Hardware. Like, and PlayStation like did this thing of like the month before, where you had Mark Cerny talking to Wired magazine about like the specs of like their box. And so that's not what impressed me. What impressed me with this is people got those two presentations and they looked at it and they're like, we don't care about this hardware stuff. Like, we want gaming, like, first and foremost, like, we want the games to like speak to us. And that's what impressed me with, like, so it's the audience response to, like, those numbers that was really cool for me. This box would be the most powerful thing, but I'd rather play Marvel Ultimate Alliance on Switch. I'd rather play Minecraft Dungeons on PC. I'd rather do anything. And so I like the fact that people are less impressed with, like, hardware right now, even though it's going to be super stunning and these boxes are going to be awesome. Now more than ever is, the indie bubble is now like getting huge again, and people are just like totally focused on like gameplay. Like, gameplay is everything. Gameplay is, and so I love this audience. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, they've got the most flops and they got the most expensive box, but show me what's fun to play on that. And so it's nothing like, oh, I'm so excited for Project Scarlet. I'm excited. I'm like, okay, what is that box going to actually do? Is it going to stream stuff? Is it going to, what's it going to do for like moving like our industry forward? And that's what's really like exciting to me, is because we're on this like this horizon of new console that like, okay, what is it going to do? And so that's what's really cool for me. That's the intriguing part of me, like, coming into like next gen, which all indications like both consoles are going to be launching by the end of 2020. So we're right there now. So.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff that's come out now that they've started talking about hardware that I think, you know, we were really early in calling, and I think a lot of people thought we were pie in the sky for it. But you know, the solid state drives and a lot of that stuff. Yeah. But I think, you know, one aspect of that, and I agree with your assessment of people just kind of being like, look, you know, that's great, but what am I going to be playing on this thing and what's it going to look like?
Yeah.
And I think that part of, you know, what normally drives a lot of that hype around, you know, this is going to be better, that's going to be better, get hyped about this hardware. And, but if you really listen to the, to what's being said by both companies, I think we're going to have, the consoles are close, you know, like if you take your base consoles or even you take, you know, the Pro and the X, I mean, the X is definitely better, but you, when you put it on a TV and just let a person play it, the difference is so microscopic. And same thing with the one in the base PS4, the difference is so microscopic. And based on what these guys are saying, it sounds like the gap is going to be smaller, not bigger this generation.
You know?
And so I think that normally the guys that drive that hype for hardware, they're not jumping up and saying, let's get excited. They're saying, well, let's see what this is, because it sounds like it's going to be really close. Like, hyper competitive, super tight, you know?
Ro, any thoughts?
So I came away from the conference with two things in my head. The first one was I was not very excited about any, say, new IP that Microsoft were bringing to the table. I thought this was going to be their big chance to really step ahead, to have these companies like Ninja Theory coming in. And I personally thought that the Ninja Theory game was a little bit of a letdown for me. I thought they were going to hit something, you know, single player campaign. And they didn't. It was just like a, I don't know, an Overwatch clone, it looked like to me. Now, people are probably going to give me crap for that, but I wasn't expecting to come in and see a kind of a Borderlands arena shooter game coming from those guys. So when it gets to the end of the conference, they show me this new hardware, and I'm kind of thinking, like, there's nothing really that I'm going to be playing on that thing that has me excited, just like you're saying. What has me more excited is the Xbox Game Pass for PC, because I have a PC. I don't have an Xbox. I have a PC, and straight away they threw, I think it was like Metro Exodus up on that thing, and you can get like the Ultimate now that just opens up, I think it's like 100 games on PC, and that to me is exciting, because now I don't need to go out and pay whatever $400 or $500 for a console. I actually have it on my PC, and I think that's the one thing that I love what Microsoft are doing. They don't seem to be separating their hardware. They're saying that if you have a PC, you should be allowed to play Xbox games. Halo, the Master Chief Collection is coming to PC as well. I'm going to jump on that. I'm very excited to actually jump back into them. I loved Halo 1 and 2, and I haven't played those games in years. And to know that I can play them with a mouse and keyboard on my PC with, you know, a really good graphics card, that's what made me excited about the Xbox conference, not the hardware shown at the end.
I don't have anything. I was going to try to add something, but I'm like, pretty well, Ro. Last round, boys. Ro, what is your last highlight from E3 2019?
It's really just a quick one, because the hype has gone into overdrive for it, but it is From Software and J.R.R. Martin's new video game called Elden Ring. And we got a snippet of gameplay. It wasn't much. It looked interesting. Rumor has it that it's open world. It's set in like medieval times. It looks like with a little bit of fantasy thrown in terms of what the trailer showed us. I personally think it's going to go down the road of a dark Lord of the Rings style game. But we'll see what happens. I'm very, very excited for that one. I was saying to Kent there during the conference that I would have been a little bit worried before I played Sekiro, but Sekiro proved to me that From Software can really do anything in that genre. They're not tied down to Dark Souls, Bloodborne style, you know, corridor game. They can really stretch it out. And Sekiro showed moments of open world and, you know, wide open spaces that I can see them blending over into an open world fantasy game, medieval fantasy game. So I'm really excited for that. I can't wait to see the first bit of gameplay. Like that, there was a lack of gameplay, like I said, at E3, and this was no different, but it doesn't make me any less excited for this one.
Yeah, my reaction to Elden Ring was...
run a mile.
I was, What's up?
I said run a mile. Yeah. from software.
That's like, oh my god, that's my first reaction. But I was telling you guys, like, I'm like, yeah, shit, like Sekiro got me. Like, I bought it. It's at the very bottom, like, of play stacks. I know it's, I'm just gonna like throw it eventually. It's gonna be a coaster. But no, I do want to see it because I like supporting like creativity like this. I want to give this game a shot and figure out what's going on. Sweet. A major issue with Elden Ring is, like, once again, it was a CG trailer that shows me literally nothing. Like, yeah, it shows you nothing. It's a hype trailer for Martin and Miyazaki.
Yeah.
And so, as much as like that's interesting to me, my reaction to it as like a Game of Thrones guy, I'm like, dude, just write your books. Like, stop doing all this like side stuff and just finish your books, man. So like, that was my thought. I'm intrigued by it, but I'm like, just please finish the book. Like, that's all I want you to do.
So rumor is he's writing kind of lore throughout the world, which makes me even more excited, because with Dark Souls and Bloodborne, it is actually the lore in the universe that is the interesting aspect of the game. That is the aspect that 100%. You keep coming back to, you keep trying to figure out its mystery. So I actually think this game is going to be a little bit more open in terms of the story and less convoluted, because I think J.R.R. Martin is going to do a great job in the background and let Miyazaki do his design of the world and the characters and creatures within that world.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. I feel like for me, Sekiro, since we don't have gameplay, is kind of like, makes me hopeful and makes me nervous.
Okay.
Because Sekiro is, like Ronan said, it shows that those guys will step out of their comfort zone and they'll do something incredible and different and interesting. But at the same time, for me personally, I didn't enjoy the way the controls shift in Sekiro. So I'm a little concerned about, if they stick with that, like, it may not be for me, but I'm really excited, and I may end up like Sean. I may end up buying it and putting it in the bottom of a stack, and that's just that. But I'm going to support them. I'm really excited. I think the idea of George R.R. Martin doing world building for them is just phenomenal, because of both of their proclivities for world building. It's just top tier, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Okay, sweet. Your last one.
So my last one, because kind of like we talked about, there's just not a lot of gameplay to be had at E3 this year. My last one is going to be like really early stages. There's not a lot to see, but just conceptually, it just excited me because of the studio's pedigree is Deathloop, which was at Bethesda's conference. I really have enjoyed the Dishonored games. I think what Arkane brings to the table is so much different than what other first-person studios are doing. And so, you know, I'm really excited to see them kind of take on that time loop mechanic.
Yeah.
I think that can be sort of another layer of what I loved about the Dishonored games, and the ability to sort of play with not just a little chunk of time or where I'm moving through it, but to really just kind of keep rehashing this mission, and at least what they're showing is that you know, your competition sort of adapting to what you're doing. Just the whole concept of that and those guys making another game that's not Dishonored, because as much as I love Dishonored, I want to see new IPs, I want to get new experiences. I really like the art style so far. I like the concept. Just in general, it looks really cool, more modern, more sci-fi. I think those guys do great sci-fi. So I mean, you know, I'm drawing a lot of conclusions from not a lot, but I think that just looks really interesting to me. It was something very unique that stood out at E3 for me.
Yeah.
Sweet.
No, like I love like the, because the concept, for those that don't know, it's like two assassins that are like trying to kill each other like nonstop. And it's like, how do you like go about this? And like, if you die, like coming back, and it's like this whole just two people like going to blows. And like, I liked like Dishonored 2's like gameplay, like by like how that game like felt to play. I'm more of an action player, not so much stealth. But when you have examples like of these levels, like the clock tower, like in Dishonored 2, that everybody talks about, like the design of that level specifically, like how complex it is. If you have something like the clock tower in Dishonored 2 and you expand it out to like this whole new type of like combat system, or like however they're doing, I'm in. Like, just like, that's what you brought up, that people were kind of discounting this Bethesda conference, but they're the only conference to me that was showing off new IP. I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah,
and I'm in on Deathloop. I'm in on Tokyo. Like, yeah, show me like all this stuff. Like, I think it's super, super cool.
I think they were a little bit upset about not showing the obvious ones that people were, thought they were going to show, the Starfield and maybe the new Elder Scrolls. Yeah. So I think they kind of got hidden by that, but I think they had a great show as well in terms of originality anyway.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I think there's a an undercurrent that people, and you and I talked a little bit about it on the stream too, is that nobody wants to blink on being the first person to show something that's obviously running on next gen hardware.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the issue with some of the Starfield and some of the other stuff, especially when they start talking about loading times. Because if you start doing stuff like traveling to different planets and quickly being able to switch between menus to move to different planets, it's going to get really obvious that a console that we currently have in hand can't do that. So it either has to be on PC or it has to be on next gen consoles. So I think, you know, Starfield's an example of that. I think some of the other games, a lot of these guys, it felt weird. And me and Ronan kind of braced it, was like, this should have been a year that there should have been a lot of gameplay, and it should have been the best of what these current consoles have to offer.
Yeah.
But it felt like none of that was there. And I really think that a lot of that has to do with, like I said, no one being the want to be the first one to blink on showing the new hot stuff before anything's really official or announced. Yeah. And it's sort of this interesting game you see Sony and Microsoft playing, where both of them are giving you just enough to stay in contention with each other as the public, but neither of them want to give you more. They just want to give it just enough so that they don't lose their lead. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It just, for me, as a person who enjoys the business aspect of the industry and kind of that chess game is a sort of a meta story to follow. To me, that part was very interesting, and you know, maybe a way to make a silver lining out of just the egregious amount of non-gameplay trailers we got.
Yeah.
So I'll finish up this segment. So I was originally going to talk about one game, but I'm going to spin it into two. I'm going to pull a Kent at your three. You talk about two games.
Signature move.
signature move. So the first one I want to talk about is Watch Dogs Legion that they showed off. And this was one of the few times that you got like an in-depth look at like gameplay and how stunning this game. But what's really impressive to me with this game is like they are totally like going against the grain of like what a Watch Dogs game has been like before this, where it's Watch Dogs 1, you had Aiden Pierce in Chicago. Watch Dogs 2, you had Marcus, I forget his last name, in San Francisco. You had protagonists. And in Watch Dogs Legion, the third game of the series, is you're not one person. You're the entirety of London, like, working together. It's post-Brexit. And so it's, like, it's just a clear, like, it's, like, political story. It's really, like, bringing up this revolution to, like, talk back against, like, it's the oppressed talking back to the oppressor, pushing back, like, against the government. In, like, game mechanics, we saw, I think this game is going to be, like, more firearms based than like Watch Dogs 2 was, where that's all about like hacking like little gadgets. They're changing up their mechanics when it comes to like gameplay itself, like minute by minute game. You're constantly switching between characters to load missions. But when this game started to leak, and the rumor was like, oh, you can be any NPC character. They're like, no, that's like impossible. But then you saw it on screen, and you can recruit anybody to be like in the Watch Dogs Legion. And hire them. And I feel that this is the first time that, man, open world games, like now we're starting to see this evolution of what can actually be done in an open world game. It's like, this is different. Like, this is not just you're one single player in a gigantic world and you're getting missions. It's how you interact with the environment around you and these like NPC players around. The game is like now changing of like what you can actually do. And when you hear them, this was not like what we're going from Watch Dogs 2 to Watch Dogs 3. This was, these plans were in place prior to Watch Dogs 2 to get to Watch Dogs Legion because this technology had to be developed. And when you're getting this much development time and you see this final product, it's completely And after that, the other game I want to mention is, we haven't mentioned it yet, Jedi Fallen Order. It's Respawn, and like for those of us who've been with us for a long time, we all have this affinity for Titanfall 2 and how incredible that single player campaign is. And that game was massively, like, it was put out to pasture, and it was released in a time where like no one was going to play it. And that game is like $4 on any sort of downloadable service now. Like, you need to do yourself a favor. You
play that. $4 yet. Worth spending. Spend it, please.
It's been updated this week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's getting a massive update. It's like 100 gig now if you want to download that thing.
Yeah, it's huge. And so seeing that studio, Respawn Entertainment, do a single player only Star Wars game, I'm like, give it to my eyeballs, like, now that's all I want. Like, that's like the two buzzwords I want to keep, like, from them. So yeah, Star Wars Fallen Order coming out in November, Watch Dogs Legion comes out next March, are two of the games with gameplay that we saw that I was completely blown away from.
I just want to jump in with Fallen Order because that was on my list. I didn't get to. I threw in something else instead. But actually, Fallen Order was probably one of my games of the show, if not the game of the show, because it did everything that I wanted a game to do when it's been showed off. It showed off gameplay and a lot of it. And I was actually very worried about this game because Respawn were working on Apex. Apex came out with that stealth launch and it just blew up absolutely everywhere. And I actually thought that Respawn were being squeezed dry. They released a CGI scripted trailer about, was it 3 or 4 months ago? And I looked at that thing and I was like, there's something not, just doesn't feel right about this. And the way they talked about it and the way they explained it, I just wasn't fully on board, but when I seen the actual gameplay, and I don't know whether you guys read the rumor, it was on Giant Bomb podcast where this game is Metroidvania style, so you can go to different planets. They're comparing it to Dark Souls in terms of, you can really attack whatever area you want to first. Obviously, if there's going to be areas that are, you're not going to be able to get through, so you have to go back, you have to go into another area. There's going to be a ship, full crew. I mean, whatever is going on in the background. I mean, if the rumors are true about this game, I think we're set up to have something amazing. And I think it's what we deserve from a Star Wars game, with EA having the license for such a long time and just continuing to bring out the Battlefront games. I'll put my hands up. I love Battlefront 2. I think what they've done is they've saved that game and more. They're releasing updates every time I go on. I've got, updates galore. They're releasing an update this, I think it's this week or very, very soon. And that's going to push out more maps, more characters. And, you have to give EA props when they deserve it. And I think they do deserve it with the Battlefront 2 fiasco. And I think Respawn are going to do an amazing job with the new Star Wars game.
Well, I think what's interesting about the Battlefront 2 conundrum for EA was that really the key to success was for them to give it back to DICE, take their hands out of it. If you read a lot of the stories that people have written about kind of what went on behind the scenes in that, was that EA basically botched the launch so hard that DICE was able to convince them, look, we know how to fix this. Just give us a shot. We've got not a whole lot left to lose. And so I think that, it speaks to, I think a lot of people have been disappointed in DICE lately too. And I think it speaks to, I hope that the EA is learning that these studios that you have are massively talented and they thrive when you let them do what they know how to do best. And I think I'm super excited for any Star Wars game. I can't help myself. I'm an unabashed fan. I'm part of the problem, whatever you want to label it, man. If they bring it out, I'm buying it. It's just that, like I'm sitting here debating whether I'm gonna buy the Lego Star Wars Skywalker saga, which I have
Oh,
no
dude,
need
I'm
to buy.
so in. I'm
Yeah,
so in
but
on
I'm gonna
that
buy
game.
it most likely.
Yeah.
You said that actually when we watched it. You're like, that's pretty cool. We
Know
thought
what
it
I
was a
mean?
new
Like, I'm
IP.
not
We were
that
like,
guy, but I'm
or
that
not a new
guy.
IP, but we thought it was a new Star Wars game. We're like, is it another one they're bringing out or what the hell? And then the Lego came up. It's like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think
totally.
it's
But I
cool.
do, and I do want to talk about Legion because, like Sean, I think that historically what Watch Dogs has offered has been excellent. The first one had great gameplay, but just terrible story, terrible protagonist. I just, what are you doing with the? You got this great 60 seconds of fun and you've squandered it. And so then when they went back to two, I was kind of excited, and they took the best part of one and they changed it. Why would you do that? So when I look at this one, I'm extremely excited because it feels like they've said, okay, well, we knew what people liked about one, and we knew what people didn't like about two, and what they kind of liked that we were hinting at in two. Let's really try and make this happen in a way that's realistic. I do think though, I've read some articles about it because I think that if people are going in hoping this game is making a bigger political statement than it is, I think they'll be disappointed. I think if we think about how these have gone in the past historically, Regardless of what side you land on the political spectrum of the issue, because it was one of the developers that mentioned that on stage, don't let that stop you from picking up the game. Odds are it's not going to be anything to script. It's not going to lean one way or the other. And maybe I'll eat my words on this, but I think that really the gaming industry has a thing where they don't want to, you know, upset people. And I understand that. And I think that if you're going to make statements like that, they've got to be larger than just political issues that are going on right now. They've got to reach deep. Spec Ops: The Line is a great example of that. Oh, that's not what a game. Specifically politics in one that reaches a lot deeper. And I think that if they do something like that, that's great. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said about the surveillance state in Europe, that regardless of Brexit, there's something to be said about that. Yeah. But I think that there were some comments about that that you mentioned, Sean, that some articles that went back and said, like, hey, you know, that was more him contextualizing it, like radical things could happen and we don't know where the future is. And so, like, I think they're a little worried. They upset some people because, you know, in general, the world seems to be about 50-50 on every issue. But I guess my only comment is I look at that and I go, I don't think they're going to make a strong political statement. I think it's going to be more of a dystopian future. And so I wouldn't let your politics dissuade you from experiencing that because it looks like a phenomenal game.
Yeah, you know. Agreed. I think that's a good place to put the ribbon on it, boys.
Yeah, awesome point, Kent.
Yeah, perfect. We want to start wrapping up the show now, but what we do every – it used to be weekly. Now we're doing it. But we go to the Facebook groups and the places where we interact on social media, and we – for audience questions. And usually pull two or three things that are pertinent to the conversation we're going to be discussing in and around the episode. And so Pat Curley responded back on a Facebook group post, and he says – Pat says, quote, I think an interesting topic at the moment is the state of remakes from the ground. Is it, I think he's saying it's like a quelling creativity, like stopping creativity for game developers now that they're simply remaking games rather than making. So what Pat is asking is like, do we think that game developers are being stymied, like their creativity is being like pushed down because they're only focusing on remakes rather than making new IP and new games?
Yeah, well, I suppose we talked about it earlier on. If you look at Resident Evil 2, I mean, the amount of creativity that goes into a remake like that is, you know, nearly as much as a new IP, if you ask me. Like, you're adding different scenes, you're adding different gameplay, you're adding, I think there was, like, new voice acting brought in, like, just a total refresh. And I think a remake like that doesn't do anything to push back on creativity. If anything, it actually makes you think outside the box because it's like playing with fire and, you know, you're taking something that's beloved and you're trying to make it a little bit better or even just to, I don't know, to just improve it in some way. And if it doesn't go right, you're going to be looked at forever, as in you ruined a classic, you ruined an original. I mean, how many times do we see that happen in music and movies, that the original is always better? But I think games have this amazing thing where we can create a remake and it actually can, you know, improve on what the original was. I won't say better, because saying it's better than the original is probably wrong, but it can improve on graphics, it can improve on voice acting, it can improve on different scenes being added to make the story wider and more appealing. And for a remake like that, 100%, I think it's actually great for developers to do it. For a remake like that's just a coat of paint, like Shadow of the Colossus, like you guys brought up, I think there is a little bit of a lack of creativity there when it's just a fresh coat of paint.
Ken, what do you think?
Yeah, I kind of want to go a little. I'm going to go a little devil's advocate on this one, being the person who kind of generally speaks from the perspective of the business. There's two ways to think about a remake. So I do agree with Pat's assessment, right? Like, there's only so much capital, only so much usage, only so many employees, only so many hours in the day. So, you know, the natural state is if you're taken from A, it can't go to B. I get it. Yeah. But what I think that a lot of people forget is that there's another thing that there's limited in business, and that's money. And people have by and large forgotten that video games cost the same since the early 90s. TurboGrafx games were around $55.
Yeah.
Well, games now are $65. Like, if anything else you owned had only increased by that percentage, you'd be astounded, right? Yeah. And I think in the games industry, because people have sort of capped what they believe value is on it, we see it happen. Businesses are trying to figure out how to make more money. And so there's loot boxes, there's DLCs, there's season passes. They've tried so many different ways. And really, I think more than people don't give them enough credit as an industry for doing a lot of different approaches, just sticking fingers in different pies to see how it works for both the customer, where they're happy with what they get, and the developer, where they get enough money to continue making games. And I think remakes are one of those areas where there's a lot more success than there is failure. And I think that you can get a lot of games where the people who are fans of that game, because of the way gaming works, you know, like you can always watch a movie. Like there's really nothing that's stopping you from watching an old, you can still watch Casablanca today. It's a classic. Yep. It's always going to be regarded as a classic. You'll always have access to it, but games are different in that way in that people lose access to games that were great in the past. And so I think remakes offer people advantages, and you can't classify remakes as one thing. There's everything from just reintroducing the original Final Fantasy as the way it played exactly on the consoles at the time and selling it for a very discounted price. Yep. To the current Final Fantasy VII remake we're waiting to come out, which is, like Ronan said, a new game. It's only taking the creative IP elements in even basic format. Like they've already admitted they're changing story elements and stuff. So I think that when people get concerned about that, what you should really ask yourself is what's the pedigree of the studio you're concerned about? And are they going to perform, whether it's a new IP or an old IP? You know, and I think that people get lost on that sometimes. Like Rare is a good example. People have a lot of love for the old Rare stuff and they want remakes of the Rare stuff, but they're always upset when Rare makes something new because that studio is just not the same anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think my opinion on it is what Ronan was saying was like when you remake something and you actually remake it from the ground up and you're able to put like creative juice into it, so it's not. Because now we've been hearing like the word remake for so long that it's not a re-release or it's not like a high definition version, which was like the trend at the beginning of this console was like we're gonna slap a paint on it, make it just 60 frames per second and 4K update, right? You're not changing the gameplay. But when you have something like Final Fantasy VII Remake or Resident Evil Remake or anything like these, it's like no, this team is putting the TLC to actually build it back up and create something unique. And that's when you can you realize that economically you're like, oh no, this is feasible because this is, we're treating this as a whole new game and we're trying to reach a whole new audience with this one. So I think, I think if you would ask a dev, I think I'm like, oh, they're probably, some are excited to like work on new IPs and challenge themselves. But I think some are excited like, no, we're going to re-thing completely different. It's going to be awesome. Now, Before we dip out of here, a follow-up to Pat was I posted the question to the guys before the show to really think of this one. What's a game right now that we would want to have remade? And we know this coming off the back of Link's Awakening remake that's coming out for the Switch in September, and we know it's from Final Fantasy VII remake that's in April of 2020, and we also know this from, again, the Resident Evil 2 remake that just came out in February. So any thoughts on this one, boys? What's a game, a classic game that you want to be remade from the ground?
You know, I think that there's fans of the show will be tired of hearing me say things like this, but it's true. There's a gap in the action sports game industry. It's been gone for a long time. It doesn't really exist in any real way. And I would really like to see Amp 2, which was, I think, a really great game. A lot of depth for a snowboarding game. Yeah, and that was an Xbox exclusive. The studio's gone. The IP is kind of in limbo. And I mean, for me personally, that game offered a lot deeper gameplay than even, I think a lot of modern snowboarding games attempt at. And I think that for me personally, I would like to see that game come back because of, A, my personal affinity for it, but also because that would be a really easy way to give people an excellent experience in that vein and maybe kind of revitalize that genre of games, you know?
Yeah, totally. Ro, did you have one?
Yeah, so I suppose I'll just go back to the very start of the From Software series with Demon's Souls. That game has been, you know, everybody wants to see a remake of that. There's been mods on PCs to try and up-res the graphics. You know, we've got a Dark Souls remaster, but I would just love that if Demon's Souls got the attention that said the Dark Souls remaster got, and to have that, I wouldn't even like a new coat of paint. I want to see a proper remake. We're spoiled rotten now in this day and age, and I want to see that being built from the ground up, to throw maybe like a Bloodborne or a Sekiro engine on top of it, and to really flesh out the world a little bit more. That was the game that I jumped on, loved it from the ground up, and just haven't played it in years. It hasn't aged very well, and I'd love to see that get a new fresh coat of paint with all the trimmings on top.
Yeah, I think the more and more I think about this, is the more I think back to like nostalgia titles, the things I want something to make me feel something like I did the first time I played it. And so coming back from holiday, I had my Switch with me, and I had like the NES, like the entertainment, like online entertainment. You get all these classics. And I think what I want right now is I want a Punch-Out, like not a remake, but I want like a new Punch-Out. Like I have such an affinity like for this series of like how cheesy it is, and like it's half puzzler and it's half like fighting game and it's half figuring out like the pattern, and it's a half a boss it's like half a boss rush game. And I think the last one we had was like a Punch-Out on it's Super Punch-Out, and there's another one on Wii, I think, because it was all motion control. And so I think that's where I'm coming down with this. And there's something really, really special about that series. The other one that popped into my head was, I'm not a big fighting game guy, but I was obsessed over the series on PS1 called Bushido Blade. Just like, it's two samurais like squaring off. And I thought this was like really cool. And what, it's not Bend. Bend just put out Days Gone. Sucker Punch with Ghost of Sushi. I'm getting flashes of that because like when we saw gameplay at E3 last year and at PSX, it was really like, it's more about you're taking on like one samurai at a time, and you're like honoring like your family and like what's going on with this. I'm pretty impressed with that, so hopefully that scratches that itch too. But so there we go. Pat, thanks for writing in and playing a part on the remake conversation. For those viewers and listeners, when we post the day of the show, jump in with your questions, and we'll get to them when they fit. And so thank you. Now, the last thing we want to talk about is the show's format and what you can expect from the Alpha Zone like moving forward. So we've been off the air we've been off the air for about a year. And in this year, the internet has like changed, and podcasting has changed, and like creating content has changed. And so when we wanted to come back, we wanted to do it the right way. So what we can promise to viewers and listeners, and if you're on the Facebook group and the fans and the writers or whoever like wants to come, the backbone of this Alpha Zone group, the three of us, is still going to be this podcast YouTube show on Facebook. It's three of us taking pertinent conversation topics and really like fleshing them out and spending an hour to an hour 15 with it like every month. And this is what we love to do. This is what the show was like built on. But also, when we're running like a new Facebook page, we have the opportunity to dive into like more creative aspects. Ronan and Kent like are big, like we stream. And so Ronan and I have streamed Apex, and Kent has jumped into Apex, and Ronan is doing constant streams with the Alpha Fox page. And Kent is like this brilliant like interviewer and this conversationalist, and he's doing like Ghost Weekend. He's doing Wildlands, and he's streaming, and he's interacting with his friends and his crew that we've had on the show before. And I love doing everything. So like I can do a little, I can jump in with streams, I can do one-on-one interviews. And so we're going to create and tie Facebook pages together to really create this like space for interactive communities, and to give you guys like something different, not just we're waiting once a month to hear a show for an hour. We want to give constant content to like the way you want it. So you're constantly interacting with us and interacting with each other. And we have great partners, like when it comes Ronin's like offshoot, and we have like friends and family like in the Republic of Gaming on like Facebook, and we're building communities and we're bridging communities together to create something new and something different, but also creating like what we are and like what we've built for the past like 3 years, which is really, really important. And this show has gone through multiple partnerships that didn't follow through. And what happens ultimately, it's us three that always come back together and to revisit and to keep going and to just build off of each other. So that's my stance on it. Boys, do you have anything to add to that conversation?
I think a good way to, I for me at least, a good way to look at it is like this is the core element, like Sean said, and this is something that we like to do. But, you know, in the time of us having a year off and in the run up to that, we were dabbling already in a lot of different stuff. And so there's a way to, we figured this was a good way to give you guys the best of what we do, right? Like the best of the podcast, you know, give it a little more time, leave it in the oven a little bit longer. So we come to you with a really fully fleshed out hour of just great content. And then in between, you know, focus on, you know, what we're doing at the moment or what we feel like we're best at, you know, play to our strengths, mix up the content and just give people a variety, but also the best of what we can offer you guys, I think is kind of the big part.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Yeah, exactly. You guys kind of hit it on the head. One thing, you're talking about different content. What we've done before in the past is not just video games. I mean, we jump in after watching a movie and have a conversation, and what we want to do is more of that stuff, you know, talking about games, movies, TV shows, any sort of entertainment property that's out there. We want to be able to let our voices be heard, and hopefully you guys will come along for the ride. I suppose the biggest thing that I want out of this is just for the three of us to be creative, not to be afraid to try something new or to post a piece of content up that, you know, it mightn't work, but chances are, you know, it could work. And that's what I want you guys to do, is just come with an idea or a piece of content and let's just throw it up for the world to see. There's no boundaries going forward with this. It's all about live video at the moment. It's all about, I mean, Facebook is absolutely booming. Instagram is booming at the moment. The reason why we're on Facebook now is because of the community that we've built in the past year or so, and we've got an audience there. YouTube at the moment is just a little bit too difficult to build, so we stepped away from that. We're still going to be posting to that if it is a case that, you know, you don't like Facebook, that you want to go over to the YouTube and check out our recorded show. That's still going to be going ahead there. We're going to be posting it up on Spotify as well, so it's a play like this content is going to be available everywhere. And the fact that we are, you know, thousands of miles apart, we are going to be splitting this show up to maybe once a month, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a rigid once a month. We may jump in and say, hey, some news dropped this week, guys, we need to do a show, boom, we're going to be back on. And that's kind of the way I want to do this going forward. We all work, we all are busy men, and I just wanted to, you know, have a space for creativity for the three of us, basically.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that with that, I think that's a perfect wrap on it. So with that, we'll get out of here. So we end every show with the plugs and like what we're working on. Kento, you're usually up first. I'll throw it back at you. Where can the lovely people find you? What do you plug in? What do you?
I am Kent Kingsford on Facebook and Squirp, SQU1RP, everywhere else. What I'm working on, I'm going to keep that under wraps for a little bit longer because I've learned to let things marinate a little bit longer. But definitely some different content, probably not appealing to the majority of the folks that watch this, but nevertheless, I'm just kind of glad to be back at it with you guys. So I'm really excited about that. It's definitely an element that was missing in some of the creative stuff I was doing. So I appreciate it. And if you guys want to come find me on those platforms, feel free.
Yeah. Awesome. Just me. I'm over on Facebook now more than ever at the Alpha Fox channel. This Alpha Zone podcast is going to be going live to that. We're also going to be creating a group for the podcast called the Alpha Zone Gaming Podcast, and that'll be created in the next week or so. So that'll be a place where this podcast will go live, and you'll get all the links for where it's going to as well, the YouTube, the Spotify, and all that good stuff. You can find me on Twitter at the Alpha Fox, and also over on Instagram at the Alpha Fox as well. So you can catch me on any of those at any time. Drop me a message. And if it is a case that you are an influencer, a developer, and you want to come on the show, this is what we're all about. We want to get people on the show. Even if it is a case that, you know, I can't make it, Sean could do a one-on-one interview with you. Yep. Ken can call you up and do a one-on-one interview. We're working off Discord now. It's a really nice platform to work with. Kent had a little bit of security issues at the start, but I think you're good now.
I just want to make sure it was me.
Yeah,
several times.
it's absolutely amazing that we can take a year off. And I mean, in the meantime, or since the last show, like Kent, or sorry, Kent, I missed you when you were over on your honeymoon, and I'm absolutely devastated that I missed you. Sean actually came over and stayed in my house. Like we had, you know, he had a holiday over in here in Ireland, and you know, to show like that we've become good friends through gaming is just a ridiculous thing, and it's something really special. And I'm glad that this is back. Because like that, I've run podcasts before, and with the Republic of Players, there's just something magical about this, and the fact that you guys are just so far away, if
Yeah.
this feels like, you know, a real friendship. So I'm glad to be back.
Yeah.
Well, you're good, Ronan. I was mostly preoccupied for the honeymoon, and the good thing is now that my wife's been to Ireland, the first thing she wants to do is go back to Ireland.
Go
So,
back.
That's
Fair.
Yeah.
So tell us,
100%.
just before we get out of here, what was your highlight? Because I want to ask Sean as well. What was your highlight of the of Ireland?
Oh, my
Ooh.
highlight of Ireland was, yeah, we've never like revisited that. I tell people all the time, my favorite moment of Ireland is when you, Tracy, and I, we went out to the local bar. That was called what, Ronan? I forget the bar's
Canton
name.
Casey's, yeah, on the
Yeah,
square.
Kent Casey's. So
Yeah.
in the square. So Ronan, Tracy, and I got pissed on Guinness, and we stumbled into the pizza, and we bring the pizza like back to Ronan's place, and we just like stood up for a long time. And Ronan and I, we sat around and we wrote music and we hung out. And
Yes.
I think that's like when Ronan talks about like the friendships, but it's like that Irish close community of like sitting in Mullingar and drinking Guinness and
Awesome.
listening to music and interacting with people. I think that's what makes Ireland special. It's like you can go see as many sites as, but having these moments of in a small town with like the local crowd, listening to live music anywhere, really, really special, really, really incredible stuff.
Brilliant. Kent?
For me, man, like I love Guinness as a beer. Like if I have a choice to drink a beer, I'm gonna drink that beer most likely, or Smithwick's. So I'm already pre-programmed to have a great time in an Irish bar. But I really enjoy the Guinness Factory. If you're ever there, if you get a chance, go
Very
do it.
cool.
It's a very touristy thing, but it's also a very neat thing. To me, the marketing stuff was very neat. The food was great. Everything about that was great. But I think the big moment me and my wife both agree was in I'll have to come back with the name. I was looking for a picture, I can't remember. But when we were in County Kerry, we went to a pub, and the bartenders there were just super nice folks. The regulars were super nice folks, and we were sitting there drinking and just kind of chatting with the guys. Some parties of some Americans came through, and the guy behind the counter was just into Irish whiskey like I'm into guns. For anyone who follows the show will understand how ridiculous of an analogy that is. But I was just picking the guy's brain, and we were sucking down Irish whiskey and drinking Guinness, and I was in the bag pretty deep. And he was like, "Hey, it's last call. For those that haven't been, it's like 12:30 if you're not have a late license, I guess." And I was like, "Well, let us get like one more, and then we'll hit the road." And he just kind of gave me like the just calm down, just chill, just be quiet for a second sign. And so they locked us in after they kicked everybody else out, and it was me and him and four their regulars, who they all knew by first name. And me and Nicole just had a blast drinking there after hours and just bullshitting with them. And just
Brilliant.
really, I think that kind of speaks to, like Sean says, just the people, the quality of the people,
Yeah,
man.
100%. Yeah. Awesome, guys.
And even when we thought about it was like, I want to go somewhere. There's a lot of places you can go in the world where people aren't fans of Americans, and just the people in Ireland are so warm and welcoming. We were like, man, like I feel like that's probably the best spot,
Yeah,
awesome.
and not disappointed.
Yeah. So, Ro, next time, like, so now you owe us a trip. So now you can
Yeah,
come back
definitely.
out, and then we'll
Yeah.
show you.
Get my
So,
shorts ready.
yeah,
We got
get
to get you in the
your
bag.
shorts ready. If anybody, we'll get out of here on this. And so, I want to share the same sentiment as the guys. And so, like, I'm just so thrilled that we're finally back, and we're finally have like this new outset, and we have like this new lease on life on the show. And we've all grown and we've all developed. Ronan's taken like a new career path. That's awesome. He's teaching. Kent's married now. I'm full-time teaching at like a new school site, and it's like life is exciting. But what I've missed is like this creative outlet, and it's like being able to like express yourself through creativity is like really, really important. And so for the watchers and the listeners of the show, is like always remember that like life comes like pretty like fast at you, and so like always have this outlet to like hang out with friends and try to like produce something. I think this is like really special what we have. If anybody wants to see any more of like My Life or whatever on PlayStation, I'm Adonai, Adonai. Everywhere else is just my name. You can just look up Sean P. Malloy. I'm there. Find me that way. But boys, it's an honor and a privilege to be back with you. Until the next show, keep an eye posted on the Facebook pages. We'll link everything together, tie it with a bow. But for the episode of June 23rd, 2019, you have been in the Alpha Zone Gaming Podcast with Ronan Foss, Kent Kingsford. I'm your host, Sean Loy, and we are out.